Great. Thank you very much for including me today. And to let you know a little bit about our pilot project. This is a collaboration between the Cambridge Health Alliance, the Massachusetts Department of Public Health, and NIOSH, and many people are involved to putting a lot of work in this to bring this to fruition. I have no financial relationships to disclose. I am a primary care doctor, a general internist at the community, one of the community health centers that are part of the Cambridge Health Alliance. And we, in 2009, joined with the Massachusetts Department of Health in a project to really look for two things, whether or not it was possible to collect occupation in the electronic medical record, and also to look at whether we could collect work-relatedness as well. I was interested in this project because I have lots of patients who work two or three jobs. They work many hours, and there was really no way to capture this information. And I wondered if we could capture it systematically, if somehow I could help my patients a little bit more. During the course of the project, we started in just our health center, but it turned out that as we did this, Cambridge Health Alliance developed a central registration where we were able to collect information for all the community health centers within the alliance during the course of the project. We are, as was mentioned, a health service that has many primary care offices in Cambridge and Somerville, and we have a lot of low-income patients and many who speak many languages and work many jobs. This is our electronic health record. We have Epic, and so I'm going to take you through a few of our screenshots. This is the screenshot that's seen by our registration folks, and there in the bottom right you can see the employment information is a free text occupation which the registration desk fills in. This is one that can actually be recorded and we can use for running reports. There's also information that's put in by the clinicians in the clinical epic. This is in our socioeconomic section or social history, where you can put in a history of all the different jobs, some more information about exposures. Unfortunately, you can't run any reports off of this, so this is, as was mentioned earlier, very useful clinically, but we can't use it in a larger context for public health or for this project. The other thing that we did we collected work-related information. This was the one area where we had to adapt Epic a little bit, and we put in a field called work-related suspected under the class section. Ordinarily, class is used for things like how severe the asthma is, what stage their cancer is, and we put work-related suspected, and from this we were able to look at all the patients who had come in, who were mostly my patients, but a few from other providers as well in our clinic, and see that there were 40 work-related cases seen at Broadway that year with a variety of different problems, sprains and strains, lacerations, multiple different languages, many different jobs as well. For me, the most important thing is I hadn't realized that I had seen so many patients in a year who had work-related issues, and it made me want to know more about workers' comp and really figure out if there were things I could offer these patients. So then we started to partner more with the Department of Public Health and with NIOSH. As I mentioned, we had moved into a central registration, and Lenore Azaroff had gone to central registration and trained them how to collect occupation with a greater degree of specificity. And we partnered with NIOSH to use this to beta test the NIOSH autocoder, the NIOX autocoder. During that year, over 75,000 patients were seen at Cambridge Health Alliance health centers, and occupation was asked of 35,000. Of note, not everybody had to go through this central registration, so a lot of people were still being registered individually at their health centers. But of the 35,000 that did go through central registration, over 27,000 provided an occupation. And when it was run through the autocoder, 10,000 reports were able to be coded into an SOC code. Then NIOSH, the individual coders, were able to code an additional 7,000 reports to get up to about 67% were able to be coded. What interested me, and I was so, in addition to having NIOSH have an opportunity to test this coder, we were then able to get this data back and to learn about our patients. Here's our demographics. It shows a wide variety of ages, a wide variety of ethnicities, as is seen in our patients. And here are our top occupations. We have many maids in housekeeping, cashiers, teachers, managers, sales, and truck drivers. And then we broke it down into languages. A lot of the state information comes with ethnicities and with other things. For me, this is so helpful to have it in terms of languages. So in our English speakers, we have teachers, managers, and cashiers. In our Portuguese population, many maids and cleaners and painters and childcare workers. Spanish speakers, many maids and cleaners and cooks. In the Haitian Creole, again, maids and cleaners, health aides, cashiers. And then even breaking it down further, our Portuguese-speaking females, a full 45% are maids and house cleaners. And the males, many painters, almost 20% are painters, 10% are cooks. And with the Haitian Creole population, 20% of the females are home health aides, and 10% are sales truck drivers and taxi drivers for the men. How can we use that to help them? This is just a great wealth of information for us as providers to reach out and to help our patients. We have occupational health information on our intranet when we're able to start doing handouts in multiple languages for our patients and really look at these occupations. In 2009, after our first pass-through, I had put some information on the intranet looking at more information about workers' comp and about youth safety. And then once we had this full information with our top occupations, we were able to add more information for patients, including health safety with cleaning products in Spanish, lead in a house painter in Portuguese, how to do back injuries, restaurant safety, taxi driver safety, and drivers in different languages, so that when we see patients in these different groups, there's have more things to provide. I also did a few grand rounds for family medicine and internal medicine groups, looking at the top 10 occupations. I think, the lead, we talked a lot about lead levels in painters. This is something that within Cambridge Health Alliance, we've always had a big commitment to, and I think everyone knows that, but we were able to really get down into more than just this one topic, talking again about diabetes and night shift workers who might be working in sales, the work-related asthma and allergies for our cleaners, choice of medications like non-drowsy or no diuretics for the drivers, and then again the return to work issues for so many patients to think about different return to work issues for all of those top occupations. The providers were also very interested in talking through a lot about how to use our occupational environmental medicine group. We have a great group within Cambridge Health Alliance, and different people use them differently, so we got to talk a little about that, and how to use community affairs and our volunteer health advisors as they go out to take some of these handouts to our patients and our communities. And the social workers, we had a session on how to education about workers' compensation and some of the other internet resources. I would say that all of the providers were very interested in this. They loved hearing about the different occupations. People had a lot of questions about workers' compensation. And I'd say our next steps are really to collaborate more with our occupational health colleagues and to fill in the gaps to get more information on the intranet, but really to outreach to our patients in other ways, whether it be going out into the community with them, whether having evening sessions in these different languages about these different topics. Because I think it's a great wealth of information, and we're very lucky to have this. So thank you to NIOSH for letting us be part of this.
Thank you. We have time for a couple of questions.
Oh, you can, in the back.
My name is Kevin Riley. I'm from UCLA. I'm actually really, really interested in this presentation, partly because we're doing some support for the thing on Pilot Project, the charity. I'm just curious to know when providers did indicate that they expected something was work-related. Could you say a little bit more about what followed from that? I mean, were patients, were there was directives to follow with employers, or what kind of support did people get if there was a suspected work-related symptom?
Well, first of all, I'll say that we specifically wrote work-related suspected because of some of these ethical, legal issues that we wanted to just make sure that as a primary care doctor, we suspected it's work-related. But really, I would pass people, send people to orthopedics or to our occupational health group to really say whether or not they felt it was work-related, or to the pulmonologist, especially if something like asthma is so a little bit more complicated to do that. So I think the support that people have or come around with the fact that we do have a very good occupational health group that provides a lot of support, or else they can go to the specialists. And then we also, the MassCosh group, I think, is very good, depending on what kind of outreach people needed with their employers. But other than that, we don't specifically have other types of outreach or support.
Thank you.
in the blue.
Hi, I'm Amy Lincoln from Micro-Commission Network. I just want to commend you as for an amazing job that you're doing.
And oh, thanks.
We love hearing about primary care clinicians who are having patients, but yay. One of the things that I'm running into in my work is, in trying to get clinicians to do exactly what you're doing, is the cost of altering these forms. And I was wondering if that A was an issue, and B, Vince suggested to me to potentially work with some of these companies, because once a form for that particular electronic health record company is made, they don't mind sharing it. So I'm wondering sort of about what kind of sort of linkages in terms of your form sharing, that all the work that you've done on your EHR, the potential to sort of get it to other users that use that same electronic health record company.
So we use Epic, and for the most part, everything that was on there was set ahead of time. You know, so the way that the registration desk put that in, that was preset, and the way that the social history is, it was a preset form. I mean, I think I would, personally, I'd like to make changes and make it a little bit better, but that's the way it already was. The only thing that we changed was to add the health-related suspected. And then also we, within Cambridge Health Alliance, have our own intranet where we have, you know, so I know the people who can upload information onto the intranet in terms of these patient handouts. And then it's just a matter of educating providers that they're there so that when they're in that 20-minute visit and they have lots of things going on and then the patient mentions, oh, I happen to be a, you know, a nursing assistant, you can just click the button and print out something quickly and easily for somebody in that language to help them. But other than that, there weren't any other forms we had to do. But I agree that it can be difficult to try to find the right person at a national organization to try to adapt something to do this. Question in the back.
Yeah, Patty Quillen from Go. How do you, I guess it's a big question always, because you're putting down suspected, you know, occupational disease. How do you make sure that it actually gets to somebody else? Because, I mean, that's one of the biggest problems with primary care, I think. It can be coded as such, but there are some that are suspected, there's some that are really obvious, you know, so especially for those, so that it doesn't get lost in the system, i.e. the person actually, somebody is going to follow up with that employer. Is there any way to do that, or did you go back and kind of look at the ones that are suspected and see how many of them actually were followed up upon?
We did not. It was more of a screening to see how many people came in with work-related suspected issues, and then it was really just followed the general stream of, that it wouldn't ordinarily go, where the patient would bring in their own workers' comp information. That's it.
Okay. Is that it? Yep. Okay, thank you very much.